Hello and welcome to a myriad of musings and music with the 9th grade of Berkshire Country Day School. I'm Esme and here with me is...
Lana.
Rafi.
Eli.
Miles.
And Nora.
Welcome to this month's interview. Today, we're interviewing author, educator, and head of school at Berkshire Country Day School, Jennifer Fox. Here's Ms. Fox talking about how she first got into education.
I kind of always wanted to be a teacher, and I really liked school supplies. So we lived across the street from a stationery store where they just had supplies for offices, and I really liked them, and so I used to buy them, and then I used to play school. And my name is, I had a fake teacher name, and my name was Mrs. Beach, Sandy Beach. And so all my brothers and sisters and friends would be in my class, and I'd teach them. And then I just decided that from the very get-go that I wanted to be a teacher.
So was it just off your fantasy of school supplies or acting?
I think acting was something that I really liked to do. I was acting as a teacher, but then I was a drama teacher.
Yeah.
I was actually an English teacher. I'm a writer, and mm-hmm. so I thought I was going to write the great American novel in the summer times and teach English in the winter, and that didn't happen yet. But I went to get a job. My first job as an English teacher, and they called me and said, hey, we got a job for you being the drama teacher. And I said, no, I think you're calling the wrong person. I don't know how to do that. And they said, well, we think you do, and we think you'll be great at it, so come on in. And I did that, and that was fun. I loved it, actually. It was what made me be able to be a school head, because school is like a big play with all different departments and different things that happen. Yeah.
So what types of activities did you do in your drama class as a drama teacher?
Well, we did a lot of script reading, so we would get scenes and do scene work. We would get different props, and they'd have to design sets. And so in a play, everything matters. There's nothing that's extraneous. So mm-hmm. they would have to, you know, take a scene and read it and then set the scene up. So decide how it would be lit, how the props would be. And then in a lot of our classes, we made scenery for the school plays.
Yeah.
So we painted sets and painted, interiors and things like that.
Cool. So, like, what is your favorite part of being an educator, teacher, now ahead of school? Like, what do you enjoy the most?
Oh, that's a great question. I enjoy two things, and one is this. I like doing real-world things with kids. So I think that young people are way more capable than we would ever think they are of doing things, like solving problems and, you know, putting on a radio show and doing this. So when I was in school, we might pretend we were doing a radio show. We might write a script and then, you know, pretend we were announcing something, whereas you can really do it, right? So that's what gets me the most excited about education, is working with young people to really do things. And then the second thing I really like about education is that the teachers are, they're really passionate about what they do and knowing young people. And I don't know any other group of adults who really values every kind of person more than teachers.
I think that this kind of aspect of enjoying what you do and enjoying teaching and enjoying engaging other people and listening to everyone and kind of accessing everyone's possibilities, is this like the most important part of a community, or what do you think a school community should have? Like, what should its strengths be?
So I authored a book called Your Child's Strengths, and the idea is that a strength is something that gives you energy. It gets you excited. It, you know, you'll get up and do it for a long time. And so I believe that everybody should figure out what that is and bring that to the situation that they're involved in. So at a school, hopefully all the adults have chosen the thing that they really want to do the most. You kind of have to be there as a kid no matter what. You're forced to go. But our job is to help you figure out what that thing is that's going to be energizing you. Because when you finally figure out where to work, you're going to be there, you know, for 30, 40 years. And so you should like what it is. So I love helping people find that, but I really think that you can't find that unless you feel like you belong to something. And so for me, the number one important part of a community is helping people feel like they belong. And belonging,
definitely,
who you are, not you know, having to become someone else.
Yeah. I know you mentioned that you've taught and lived in various places around the country. So tell us, what was your favorite place to teach or favorite school?
Sure. So I taught at the International School of Kenya in Nairobi, Kenya. And so I lived in Africa for a couple years, and I was able to teach at an international school. So the kids there were from 32 different countries.
Wow.
Wow. What did you teach? How's the education different from in Africa as opposed to America?
So it was an international school. So the kids' parents, most of them worked at the UN, or they worked in nonprofit organizations, yeah, or they worked in the Kenyan government. So it was taught in an American and a Canadian curriculum with a little bit of British in curriculum. So it was just like we do. But I taught English. I taught the newspaper. I taught field hockey and coached field hockey. And I taught, I was an advisor to 10th graders, really was my job there.
How did you come to this job in Kenya and this teaching?
So I was living in Colorado after my first teaching job was in Breckenridge, Colorado, and I loved it there. It was beautiful. It was great to live in the mountains. And then I got kind of bored with the adult life. They just talked about skiing all the time. And I love skiing, but I just was, there was only so many times I could talk about that run or that mogul. So I just had a real yearning for adventure, and I wanted to go to the most exotic place I could find that seemed the most different. And I first went overseas. I went to a job fair, and I got a job in Izmir, Turkey.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I went to Turkey for my first overseas job.
And then you found yourself to Kenya.
And then to Nairobi, and then I came back and went to graduate school at Harvard. And so I lived in Boston. So I was living in Massachusetts at one other time. Mm-hmm. And am I usurping your question?
Oh, no.
Oh. And then I also went to graduate school at Middlebury College. So I was going to graduate school in the summer. So I'd come back from overseas and go to school in Vermont and then go back overseas before I moved full time back.
Is there a certain experience from your international teaching experience that sticks with you, or a certain story or a moment?
Yeah, so I'm happy you asked that question. Every year at the school, the ninth graders climbed Mount Kenya. And Mount Kenya is really hard to climb because it ascends really quickly, and it gets to a point where you get dizzy really quickly and lose oxygen, and so everyone can't do it. And one of the things was that girls tend to, by their nature, lose the oxygen circulation quicker than boys do. So girls had a harder time making the summit than boys. And it wasn't because they weren't as strong. It wasn't because they weren't as smart. It was just because of the particular way that their bodies worked. So what I learned was that was a great experience, but I don't like offering kids opportunity where everybody can't have a chance to be successful. And I don't think that everybody should win at everything. I mean, it's good to lose at things, but it's also should be a place where you absolutely can have people be successful if they, do all the right moves.
So quality in education. That's one important factor.
Yes, I think really strongly that there's enough for everybody, and everybody should have a fair share and fair shot at doing, what they want to do in life.
So how would you apply that to Berkshire Country Day School as a new head?
I think that one of the reasons I wanted to come to Berkshire Country Day School was because it has a very strong sense of belonging. It seems like there's a place for everyone. Mm-hmm. One of the places that I think that we could maybe do some work is, I came up with this because I've been listening to people. So one of the things that we do is it seems like we celebrate just a few students at the graduation in different subject areas. And I think everybody has something that they do that's really important. And I would like to see us honor kids separately. I'd like to see an award ceremony that really honors the strength in everybody. So it's up to the adults and the kids together to figure out what that is. Like, what's your particular strength and what's your particular thing that they're going to be different, right? So it's not a matter of, well, you won and so you lost. It's a matter of you bring this to the table and it's valuable, and you bring this to the table and it's valuable. And I would like us to celebrate what we all bring that's the most valuable thing that we can bring.
Would you say that's generally in academics or anywhere?
I think that's almost everywhere, because I think school's not just about academics. It's really about developing the whole person.
Yeah.
Is there a certain moment that stood out to you when your voice wasn't heard that made you want to change it for other people?
That's a great question. And no, it's the opposite. There were moments where I was nurtured, where I felt like I wasn't seen, where somebody noticed me. So I was when I was in first grade, I wrote a story that my teacher thought was really great and asked me to go to read to the eighth graders. And this is why I like BCD, because, you know, we have got lots of range of kids. And so they mean bigger kids when you're little mean something to you. And so, I mean, I loved it at school when you have a young child. Emmy today was screaming, you know, Hannah, Hannah. She knew her. So I went and read a story to the eighth grade when I was in first grade. And it was the most exciting moment of my life. But I didn't know that I could write a story really well until the teacher pointed it out to me. And I thought, you know what? Everybody has something that they do that they are proud of. And it's up to people to help them, you know, celebrate that.
And how do you help students and people in general celebrate that special thing that they're really good at?
Well, I think the first thing to do is one to notice that, to know there is that thing, to look for that. And then I think it's really important to listen to people. So people will reveal to you what they're passionate about because they'll talk about it a lot. And I think that one thing that happens in today's world is we don't listen to other people as much as we could and should. And when you listen, it shows you really care. I think it's the most caring act you can do for someone is to listen to them tell their story or listen to them explain to you what their experience is.
You're an educator, so you teach things, but is there a certain way that you listen to people and maybe share with other people how to listen?
Sure. So I really believe in asking questions and being curious. So if you're with people and like you're asking me a lot of questions right now and it's making me feel validated. So when you're with other people, if you ask them more questions about who they are rather than talking all the time, like I'm doing right now, then you'll learn about them and you'll make them feel like you're interested in them. And I think so. That's my main advice to anybody who's seeking to connect with other people is to really learn to ask meaningful questions and then listen to the responses.
Yeah. So it's all about, again, your theme of inclusivity, not only just in listening, but also in teaching and understanding students. Mm-hmm. So I had a question, since we're students at Berkshire Country Day School and you are the new head. What do you, as a head, what do you want to, not to necessarily change, but to help promote the school or make some sort of quality better?
Yeah, so I'm at the school at a really interesting time. All throughout the world, independent schools are trying to figure out sort of how to sustain themselves in the future. And I'm not really interested in sustaining BCD. I'm more interested in having BCD really thrive. And so what that's going to mean is that BCD finds a way to connect to the greater community. So it's not just doing the same old strategies. I mean, there's certain things you have to do to have a good school. You need to hire good teachers. You need to have excellent programming. But you don't need to jump on the quickest bandwagon and do the next, you know, hot thing just in order to stay competitive. What you really need to do is find out who you are and what you have to offer as a school to the community, and more than just have kids come through your school. So like right now, you're in a community situation, you're learning and you're contributing to a bigger venue than our school. The more we can do things like this, the more that we're engaged in the community, the better our school will be. And so my job is to help us find how we are going to connect in the future to the broader community beyond just this campus.
How do you think we could do that?
I don't know, but what I have in mind is to get a lot of people's ideas, connect them to the mission, and really serve as a catalyst for developing a process for finding out what our strength as a school is going to be moving forward.
Uh-huh. And do you think younger voices, such as ours, as ninth graders or in the upper school, are valid?
Oh, I think that you have probably all the answers that we're going to need within your voices, absolutely. So we just need to guide you in that process.
And for other educators that might be in a school where they're still trying to help students find their voices, do you have anything to say to them or to say to teachers or parents that really want their child's voice to be heard?
Well, I think that parents and adults really like to give advice to kids, and kids don't listen to our advice. And so I would say maybe, you know, not tell the story of how we walked to school 3 miles in the snow because you don't care. And really, you know, listen, find ways to listen to what it is that you're trying to say. And again, it's about listening before offering advice. It's about hearing what your experience is, asking questions before, you know, saying this is how it has to be. So I really think that treating children like people is most important. Mm-hmm.
So do you think at BCD, as you help expand and develop it, do you think that there will be like an increased focus on something, or do you think it'll kind of you'll diversify things or focus academically or otherwise? Or how do you think moving forward, what will be how will it work?
So I think that BCD has all the ingredients that it needs to be sustained forever. We have to amplify those things that really differentiate us from other schools. So by amplifying them, it means we choose which values we're going to really focus on, and then we sort of funnel our all of our energy toward those things. So I think what you're going to see is more focus on whichever value we choose to really dig into. And then I really believe that becoming accessible to more kids is important. And we've taken some big steps to make BCD more affordable to more families. And that's a big goal for us now. We're starting a new program called the Fair Share Tuition Program next year, where instead of offering a financial aid package to people, we will meet people with where they are and give them tuition rates based on what they can afford to pay. So hopefully that will have us be accessible to way more students, really in the middle class and below.
So you've mentioned how you've kind of loved to travel abroad, and you've been at many different places across the U.S. and across the world, really. And so now you're settling here in the Berkshires. So what do you think special about the Berkshires? What do you like about the Berkshires? Dislike? Do you have any thoughts on the Berkshires? How it differs from other places you've been?
I really like the fact that we are in the wilderness here. I mean, we are in the woods, and it's usually like, oh, there's a town, and then there's some woods and park around it. But it's almost like we are just like guests. These little towns are guests in the big woods area here. And I've lived in really big places. Like I have a home in Taos, New Mexico, and there's big mountains and there's woods there, but it's not like here where we are guests in nature. And I love that about here.
Thank you so much for coming and letting us interview you.
Oh, thank you for having me. This is a great show, and I hope you get tons of listeners. Thanks.
Thanks so much.
Welcome back. In this segment, we're going to discuss some current events from Nora and Eli. Nora, take it away.
So recently, Nancy Pelosi announced a formal impeachment inquiry against Mr. Trump. Some Democratic lawmakers said it was possible that the articles of impeachment could be drafted by the end of October, according to the New York Times. Although Congress goes on a 2-week break on September 28th, Chairman Schiff and his committee would keep working, according to the House Intelligence Committee. Just recently, the House subpoenaed Mike Pompeo, the United States Secretary of State, for Ukraine-related documents. The complaint against the United States and Ukraine, specifically Donald Trump, was made by a whistleblower. For those of you who don't know what a whistleblower is a person who exposes secretive information or activity that is deemed illegal, unethical, or not correct within a private or public organization. The report was in the form of a letter sent to the chairman of both the House and Senate Intelligence Committee. There were several main points made in the report. The first being, White House officials believed they had witnessed President Trump abuse his power for political gain. The whistleblower was concerned that President Trump was abusing the power of the presidency to solicit interference from a foreign country in the 2020 election. White House lawyers tried to hide the reconstructed call transcript, the whistleblower claims, and also that White House lawyers directed White House officials to remove records of the July 25th call from the system. The United States Department of State saw that Rudy Giuliani's rogue outreach to the Ukraine for Trump as a threat to national security. The whistleblower recounts the struggles by the senior United States diplomats to deal with the confusion that was created by the president. 4. Trump's push for investigations coincided with the sudden change of policy with respect to the United States' assistance to Ukraine. It appears that President Trump was using foreign policy as leverage to pressure Ukraine into producing dirt on Trump's rival, Joe Biden, and his family. 5. The whistleblower raised concerns about Attorney General William Barr's involvement in Ukraine investigation into the Bidens.
Yeah, I think it's also important to note that support across America for Trump's impeachment has increased by more than 9 points in lieu of this inquiry. Yeah, I think it's also important to add that the approval nationwide for Trump's impeachment has increased 9 points since Pelosi launched this inquiry. And I think experts think that this will be definitely a defining factor in whether senators or representatives will vote for Trump's impeachment, whether they have the support of the people in their district and across the nation.
Okay, that was very interesting to hear from Nora and Rafi about the possible impeachment, and now I'm going to turn it over to Eli. Here's Eli with his current event.
Recently, presidential candidate Elizabeth Warren's support in the polls has been rising. Her support in national polls in August was at 19% and has risen to 27% now. While Warren climbs, it seems that Biden is slowly falling in the polls in his support. In the most recent poll, he had 29% support, down from 32% in August. Elizabeth Warren's support is also diversifying. In July, her support among black voters was at 4%, and it is now at 19%. Biden's support has been going down in these areas as well, from 53% down to 40% now.
No more coal, no more oil. Keep that carbon in the soil. No more coal, no more oil. Keep that carbon in the soil.
What you just heard was a segment from a global climate shake recently that their school participated in. As a school, all of the students made posters and drawings to make awareness for climate change and take action. We took a bus and we went to the town of Great Barrington, and we protested from upper school. There was the whole entire upper school, and as a school we presented and talked about climate change and the evidence of it, and here is Nora with her presentation on climate justice, which is very valid in this time period.
So climate justice or climate injustice is a demand being made by Greta Thunberg and many others, and the definition of climate justice is this. Climate injustice refers specifically to the unfair distribution and benefits and damages related to climate change. This is another instance where, again, a handful of humans profit at the direct expense of many. There are three main factors to climate injustice that can be broken down into roughly these three categories: poverty, power, and price. To start, we'll talk about poverty. Thousands have already died from worsening natural disasters, and people living in poverty have the hardest time preparing for and recovering from these disasters. Underdeveloped nations do not often have the resources to support the population before and after disasters, and people with money and passports from rich Western nations can get up and move when climate change begins to affect them. Not everyone has that luxury. Secondly is power. Those most affected by climate change are not the ones causing it. Climate change has largely been affected by the burning of fossil fuels by rich industrialized nations. Price. You pollute, you pay. Greenhouse gas emissions continue to rise in developed nations. The G8 so far have only pledged $6 billion, a shockingly inadequate amount to be distributed through the World Bank loans, which causes underdeveloped nations to pay twice for their own suffering. Poverty and climate change. Climate change in food threatens the world food supply. An increased amount of floods and droughts can make it harder to grow and produce food, and as a result, food becomes limited and the price of food increases. This brings us back to the issue of climate injustice. As the price of food goes up, it makes it harder and harder for those living in third world countries to buy enough food to survive. Undernutrition is the largest health impact of climate change, the vast majority in developing countries. Those with ample access to food are less likely to be undernourished. Climate change-related conflict. Conflict is the main cause of poverty and suffering in the world right now. Conflict can be worsened by climate change. Taking into account current economical, political, and social challenges, climate change increases the competition and conflict over resources. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, the amount of rainfall has increased greatly, and the timing of such rainfall has stunted food production, causing competition for farmable land. Climate refugees. Natural disasters, either induced by or created by climate change, displace millions in search of safe shelter. As the sea levels continue to rise, those that live close to the ocean are forced to move inland. Changes from deforestation, overgrazing, drought, and excessive rain can destroy crops and force farmers to move to find work. This ties the poverty portion of climate injustice. Often families don't have resources to pick up and move after unforeseen circumstances related to climate change. So there is more factors to climate injustice, but right now let's focus on how we can achieve climate justice. One, keep fossil fuels in the ground. Reject false solutions to climate change. Advance solutions that are just, feasible, and essential. Honor climate finance obligations to developing countries. End corporate interference in and capture of climate talks. And developed countries must honor their fair shares for largely fueling the crisis. And let's remember that climate justice is a term used for framing global warming as an ethical and political issue, rather than one that is just purely environmental or physical in nature.
That was our current events segment from Nora and Eli. We'll be back in a minute with another segment. Welcome back from the break. This segment is going to be a musical segment, and right now you are listening to Beethoven Variations for cello and piano. Thank you. That was a Variations by Beethoven for piano and cello. This segment is a music segment. Rafi and I will be doing this segment. Rafi?
Hi.
This is a piece group of pieces that we're actually going to be learning at school to perform at some point. So it's fun to listen to.
Mm-hmm. I played the piano. Miles plays the cello. And this is one of Beethoven's earliest pieces, Opus 5, actually. And Beethoven he's a master of theme and variation, and so this is kind of what he loves to do. And in this piece, you can hear a lot of Mozart in it. It's kind of Beethoven just trying to define himself, and he's coming right after Mozart. And so you can hear some of Mozart's style in that. But Beethoven, even from the very beginning of his compositions, of his work, has begun to integrate the cello much more than the people who came before him had, like Mozart or Haydn. And so, actually, Mozart didn't write any sonatas for cello, and so here's Beethoven featuring the cello, and so he's just kind of going to integrate that cello more into just the stage of music. And this piece is a theme and variations off of, actually, Handel's Judas Maccabeus, See the Conquering Hero Comes. And so Beethoven really looked up to Handel as kind of an inspiration, and he thought that Handel was the best of the best. And so he did these variations as kind of a tribute to Handel and as kind of respecting him.
I really kind of enjoy how the beginning kind of sets the stage with the theme. There's a kind of shorter theme, and it really sets the stage for the variations to come. So that's the theme, and the variations are what follows. And I really enjoy that just because you hear what the bass is and what he was thinking about when he wrote the actual variations.
Yeah, it'll be really fun to play this.
Okay, so we're going to move on to a different piece now, and this is another Beethoven, correct?
Yeah, it is. So this is Beethoven, but it's later in his life. It's actually one of his late quartets, and he's really kind of got himself defined kind of his style. And so this is him kind of, some people would say, at his best in one of his late quartets. And this one is in E-flat major.
So it's interesting. We're going to see his early music and his late music, his early music being him defining himself and this being very defined. And so I think that'll be a nice contrast. So here is a late quartet. We'll talk about it afterwards.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so that was a Beethoven late quartet. We'd like to mention, though, that through this section, we're going to be playing many different types of music. We just started with classical. Each person in the class kind of got to pick pick a song if they want to. So we're going to move through a few different styles of music. And one thing I'd like to mention really quickly before Rafi dives into the Beethoven, which I know he has a lot to say about, is this is Opus 127.
Yeah.
So the variations that we heard a minute ago, Opus 5. So there's a very big difference. These are kind of on the either end of...
Yeah, this Beethoven piece was written in the last few years of his life, I think 2 years before he died. And this kind of, this piece with its grand opening and its kind of major happy feel is kind of reminiscent of Eroica, the symphony that he wrote, number 3. And so I think that this piece has a lot to do with the time period that it was being written in. It kind of like is like triumphant. And I think that a lot of people in the time period, composers, but also philosophers and thinkers, they were thinking about this idea of a human and the human persistence and the kind of optimistic view of humanity. And so this kind of Beethoven piece encapsulates that and kind of speaks to Beethoven's philosophy as well as his skill at composing. So next, we're going to kind of change gears a little bit, and we're going to play a song requested by Nora specifically, Southern Cross by Crosby, Stills, and Nash. And so, so here it is. It's more of a rock song, switching gears, and Nora really loves this song. It's one of her favorites.
Got out of town on a boat from the Southern Islands, sailing to reach before a following sea. She was making for the trades on the outside and the downhill run to Papeete. Off the wind on this heading like the Marquesas, got 80 feet of a water line, nicely making way in a noisy bar in Avalon. I tried to call you, but on the midnight watch I realized why twice you ran away. Think about how many times I had fallen. Spirits are using me, larger voices calling. What heaven brought you and me? Can I be forgotten? Southern Cross for the first time, you understand now why you came this way. 'Cause the truth you might be running from is so small, but it's as big as the promise of a coming day. So I'm sailing for tomorrow, my dreams are a-dying, and my love is an anchor tied to you,
tied with a silver chain.
I have my ship and all her flags are flying. She is all that I have left,
and music is her name.
Think about
how many times I have fallen. Spirits are using me, larger voices calling. What heaven brought you and me? Can I be forgotten?
that was Southern Cross.
Yep. So yeah, that was Nora's favorite song that she suggested for us to play. And this song, Nora loves sailing, and so this song's about sailing and Southern Cross. The title actually references the Cross constellation.
Well, our next song, picked by me, is an Earl Scruggs and a tune called Randy Lynn Rag. And then we might have time for one more after that. So here is Earl Scruggs playing Randy Lynn Rag. Earl Scruggs. So Earl Scruggs is a very influential person in the bluegrass world. He unfortunately just passed away about 15 years ago. And that was just one of his tunes that he's well known for. He's well known for a finger picking style, which he kind of pioneered and brought back to life. And so I really like him and I really like this tune, so I decided to play it. And our next and final tune for this segment, Rafi, you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so this is going to be a song that kind of, we finished off with some rock, some folk music, and this song kind of almost blends those two genres together, folk, rock kind of combination, and Miles and I both really love this song, and I think many other people do as well. It's a great one. So this is I've Just Seen a Face by the Beatles.
Okay, and here is I've Just Seen a Face by the Beatles.
I've just seen a face, I can't forget the time or place where we just met. She's just a girl for me, and I want all the world to see we've met. Had it been another day, I might have looked the other way, and I'd have never been aware. But as it is, I'll dream of her tonight. Falling, yes, I am falling, and she keeps calling me back again. I have never known the like of this. I've been alone and I have missed things and kept out of sight. But other girls were never quite like this. Falling, yes I'm falling, and she keeps calling me back again. Calling me back again. I
I've just seen her face, I can't forget the time or place where we just met. She's just a girl for me, and I want all the world to see we've met. Falling, yes, I'm falling, and she keeps calling me back again. Falling, yes, I'm falling, and she keeps calling me back again. Oh, falling, yes, I'm falling, and she keeps calling me back again.
Thank you for listening to the first radio show done by the Berkshire Country Day School's 9th grade. We have time for one last song by Billy Joel, The Stranger. Make sure to tune in next month to this radio show.